Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I listened very carefully to the contribution of the member for Castries East. In fact, I listened carefully to the contributions of all the members opposite. The member for Castries East and the former Prime Minister and current leader of the opposition launched what can be considered a spirited attack on this budget. I listened to explanations for various issues facing this country. None of these issues are new. These issues have been around for a long time. They are around prior to the elections. I noticed there was a bandage for every single soap. I never listened to a Labour Party meeting, so I take it for granted that members opposite explained all these deficiencies to the people of this country. So why did they lose? That's the question. Why? Because from what I'm hearing, they did nothing wrong. Every single thing that the electorate should have taken into consideration in casting a ballot has been explained to perfection, and yet they lost. Why? Something is wrong. So we must ask ourselves, what is wrong? What is it that made the people of this country decide that they were not fit for a third term? Well, I've heard a lot of it on the highways and byways of this country. Because the transparency that I'm seeing here today didn't seem to exist in the past. Where was it? So it seems that in order for St. Lucians to know what is going on, the best thing to do is to leave members opposite where they are for the next 15 years. Madam Speaker, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is a very important ministry, and it gains particular significance at this time. Therefore, I won't spend a great deal of my time dealing with matters that were brought to the attention of this House by members opposite. Thank you. But what I will say, Madam Speaker, is that we have an important duty today of dealing with the estimates of expenditure as presented in the appropriation bill presented to this House by the Honorable Minister of Finance. We, the members of this House, are being asked to approve the princely sum of $1,249,250,800. That's a nice amount of money. At least by regional standards. And of course, you have to ask yourself the responsible question as someone entrusted with the responsibility that you have in this House by your constituents: why should I vote in favor of this appropriation bill? Why should I do that? The members opposite have described it as short-sighted, of bearing the footprint and signature of a former public servant, containing tunnel vision, multiple personality disorder, unrealistic, overly ambitious, a mishmash, a cut and paste budget. You know, this is not the first budget being presented by this Minister of Finance. And in all the budgets that he has overseen over the many years, I can think of none that has done anything but enhance his reputation to the point that at 83 years old, he can come back into politics and put you in opposition. So what are you suggesting? The leader of the opposition was particularly severe on the budget, while taking every opportunity to highlight the miraged achievements of his administration. Mirage, my friend. You know what a mirage is? You know, you think it's there, but it's not there. It looks real, but it's not. In the course of his presentation, he said that the crowning glory of his achievement was a reduction in unemployment in this country to 13.2%. 13.7, I stand corrected. And I quote, the lowest figure on record since the statistical department began tracking this activity. 13.2%. 13.7. The key here is, what was this about? Are these the figures, the results of a solid developmental foundation that can be sustained for years and years and years to come and be reduced as we move forward in our development? Or does the fact that the elections were coming up last year, did that have something to do with it? Because you saw a situation in this country where there was massive borrowing on the part of the opposition. You saw us move into a situation where there was all sorts of development tied to the World Cup being activated at that particular point in time. Construction on the roads was there. Part-time police was being hired. You see them all over the streets with t-shirts on. Part-time police. My information is that after the World Cup, the plan was to send them home. My information. That's the trick. It's the same trick that resulted in people having contracts signed. Employment contracts and construction contracts on election day last year. So as to saddle this government, encumber this government in an effort to destroy this government. But I will tell you, if there was a sense of nationalism, if there was indeed a love of this country, the country would have been put first and the new government would have been given an opportunity to decide which way it wanted to go based on the choice of the people. But no, sign contracts. I have a contract in my office, a contract the government can never get out of, signed on election day. That's what you get. Madam Speaker, yes, 13.7% is accurate, Mr. Leader of the Opposition. It is accurate. But the fact of the matter, Madam Speaker, is that it is a mirage. It cannot be sustained in the short term for the simple reason that economic activity is expected to slow down. You can't sustain economic activity unless you continue to borrow in the manner that was borrowed in the past. How are you going to do that? Responsibly. Anybody can boast of achievements in government, economic growth, if you're borrowing money. You're throwing money into the economy on a consistent basis. But the fact of the matter is it's not sustainable. And we can see what's happening. The debt service ratio, unacceptable levels at this stage, leaving little money for development, for your capital program. And so when you leave little money for the capital program, naturally, This is a government that does not intend to saddle future generations with additional borrowing. So what do? We embark on a prudent but very aggressive attempt to seek donor funding. Everything told is unrealistic. So we must try. We must move in that direction to secure donor funding. Because we don't want to go borrowing. In fact, it is not even easy to borrow anymore because the capital markets are now exhausted with St. Lucian bonds. Basically, what they're saying to you is, unless you're willing to pay me an extraordinarily high return on that investment, I am not going to take the risk. That's the legacy of a much recently ballyhooed phrase, Kenyonomics. That's the legacy of it. Saddling future generations of this country with an unsustainable debt. So, Madam Speaker, I hope I have some time because I want to deal with some of the things that members opposite have to say. You hear about Taiwan soon enough. You'll hear about it soon enough. Madam Speaker, the member from Cassis East spoke about things like cost overruns and things of that nature. That you must have it. Of course you must have it. There were cost overruns to the tunnel, that's a fact. They've been cost overruns. You build a house, there are cost overruns. But 100%? You know what I mean? If a contractor tells me that my house is going to cost $100,000, somehow or the other, it goes to $200,000? 100% cost overrun? And the member for Cassis East is so disingenuous that he'll start talking about bridges and so on that were part of the project. When in truth and in fact, Madam Speaker,
the member of Cassis East is accused of disingenuous. He must enjoy, and his evidence of disingenuity is not in this side, not in me.
Madam Speaker, I withdraw. But shall I say that the member for Cassis East has taken a few liberties with the facts? Madam Speaker, those bridges that the member speaks about were already factored into the project in the initial stages when the original bid was given. So to suggest that when you go out there and do this, that for some reason that was an extraordinary event.
You have a point of order.
I just want to slight correction. I was referring to the fact that the minister said that a few miles of road cost X amount of dollars. And I was saying that we should factor in the bridges, etc.
Madam Speaker, the context in which that statement was made, as I understand it, was relative to cost over. Now, Madam Speaker, let's move on. Numerous questions were asked, Madam Speaker, by members opposite. And then, of course, I asked myself a question. Why should I support this budget, containing the princely sum of $1.2+ billion of our people's hard-earned money in the manner outlined by the minister tonight? The answer, Madam Speaker, is simple. This budget, as stated, has as its theme aims to bridge the divide and reunite St. Lucia. And in the process, to forge one destiny by creating opportunities for all. That's a powerful statement. That's a statement everybody in this country can relate to. And at the core of that statement is the reason why, in spite of all what was said, in spite of all the excuses, in spite of all the bandages for every sore, the people of this country voted the way they did. Because you know what? They didn't feel they were part of this grand growth in GDP every year. They didn't feel that any money was filtering to them. They felt that this government, in spite of all it had to say about being a Malawi government, the recent government, that they weren't really taking care of their interests. As I said before, Madam Speaker, what is the utility of record economic growth if it does not translate into an improvement in the quality of life of those who need it most? What's the benefit of that? Figures. 5%, but Lucilec cutting your electricity. 8% growth, 6%, as the case may be, but you can't feed your children, you can't send them to school, you can't pay the transport that you need on the weekend. The same Malawi government cuts the transportation for the students. You think that resonates to them? It doesn't resonate. Can't relate to that. Madam, mainstream St. Lucia has been suffering, and this budget is intended to deal with that. Because I tell you, there are those who will swear on a stack of Bibles that it is only certain party operatives, cohorts, members of the party, as the case may be, that was the qualification for benefiting from all that growth. And you know, Madam Speaker, speaking of cohorts and party operatives, I want to put a matter to rest here. But I noticed that the member for Library, I think it was Beaufort North, found it necessary. I understand he's under a lot of pressure in his constituency now. I didn't expect that so soon, but nonetheless, we have to move on. Pressure is part of politics. But the member for Library came out here and exorcised from the grave a statement I made concerning Mongoose Gang. But these fellows have a way, Madam Speaker. Should I say the member for Library? I stand corrected, Madam Speaker. It's been a few years. You see, these, the members opposite, they have institutional memory in many cases, you know. At least two of them. So when they come and they run all these things by the people of St. Lucia, the people of this country must remember that it's only a few short months since we've been back. We're still digging. You know, we haven't reached the golden nugget of what we're seeking. And Madam Speaker, I recall saying that there's a member of this government, and that's the government of 1997, who is acting as though he is in a mongoose gang. I am happy to report to honorable members that this individual is now a card-carrying member of the Labour Party. So we can put this matter to rest, because I feel vindicated in my statement, and I think he is where he belongs. That clarification aside, this budget is therefore geared to beginning the process.
Honourable Member for Labrie, you have a point of order.
Madam Speaker, I am very, very surprised that the Honourable Member for Choiseul would accuse me of, you know, saying that about Mongoose Gang. At no time during the proceedings of this Honourable House have I ever even used the word Mongoose Gang, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, let me say this. I did begin my comment by saying Labrie and then corrected myself to Beaufort North.
I believe that on the second occasion...
I did go back to Labrie. In that case, Madam Speaker, my apologies to the member for Labrie.
Thank you.
Honourable member for Beaufort, no?
Madam Speaker, I rise once again slowly to...
Do you have a point of order? Would you indicate what the point of order is, honourable member?
My point of order in my rising, Madam Speaker, is to request the member for Schwizel to please indicate when I said anything about he indicating anything about Mangus Gang, Madam Speaker. I want the member to please indicate.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think we need to move on because I think all members here are well aware of what was said in this honorable house.
Order.
The I'm here. I'm in this honorable house.
Honorable members, order.
I'm the member of Pushwazel.
Honorable minister, will you please continue with your presentation?
I have every intention of doing that, Madam Speaker. Thank you very much. That clarification aside, Madam Speaker, as I said, this budget is geared to beginning the process of restoring equity in the pursuit of national development, both in geographical terms and terms of individual citizens. We're starting the process. We've lost a few years, but we're restarting the process. This is a budget of restoration, Madam Speaker, a budget of stock-taking, and a budget that seeks to pull our country out of the quagmire of nepotism, cronyism, and mendicancy. I'll tell you this, there may be some people who may feel somewhat offended or may say that, you know, the use of that word tends to send the offensive smell up their noses. But you know, when you have people working for $20 and all this sort of thing, $25 as the case may be, I don't want somebody jumping up to say $23.22. But figures to that effect. And you have people growing to depend on that as their salary. You're promoting mendicancy in the name of alleviating poverty or helping the poor. I would think that a better strategy would be what we are considering to do in this budget. And that is, it is the foundation of what the UWP has always done. Create economic growth. Sustainable economic growth by prudent borrowing, investment in infrastructure that has long-term economic benefits. You all won't see it. None of the opposite won't see it, Madam Speaker. They can't understand that. This is knee-jerk. This is a knee-jerk philosophy of this administration, this past administration. As soon as there's a problem, you run and throw money behind it. As long as you feel that you might lose a few votes there, you run and put a little bandage in there. You don't worry about where the money is coming from, how it's coming forward, or how it's going to be paid 20 years from now. Sometimes I would tend to believe, Madam Speaker, that the criteria for borrowing is how far can we get away with it. The criteria for members opposite until we leave and the problem remains for whoever else is there. I don't care. Every single mosquito wing that falls on the tracks of this nation, this government reacts to it. This past government reacted to it. No, we're changing that. That is the basic philosophy of this government, a philosophy that resulted in members opposite in 1997 inheriting a debt of around $500 million. Give or take something, again, my own members opposite are quick to jump up. I don't have to say it was 500. Prudent borrowing. Because I remember the current Minister of Finance and then Minister of Finance say that we will develop this country at a sustainable pace. You mightn't get everything right away. But at least you know that it is sustainable. I liken what has gone on in the past to a situation, Madam Speaker, where family has difficult times, things are bad, the children are crying, they want toys, they want bicycles, they want all sorts of seats, they want all sorts of little things, maybe even they want important things. But the parent calls to John will sit back and say, no, we cannot afford it now. The other one, perhaps sitting to your left, will go to the bank and borrow money to buy the bicycle. And then wonder why we end up in the mess that we are, that we're in. Madam Speaker, the budget presented by the Honorable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance will be implemented by the individual agencies within the public sector. And hence, it is opportune that I spend some time outlining the role of the Ministry of External Affairs, International Financial Services, Information and Broadcasting in this process. I have on other occasions alluded to the absence of a synergistic relationship between the portfolios which comprise this ministry. This notwithstanding, the ministry will play its part in ensuring that this budget touches the lives of all St. Lucians. When we speak of foreign affairs, people generally refer to the political aspect of external relations, which apart from protocol and consular issues, deals with the initiation and review of foreign policy, supervision of the work of overseas missions and embassies, and negotiating, liaising with foreign governments, international and regional organizations, and local representatives of these bodies. This is all done with the express purpose, Madam Speaker, of protecting national interests. However, in expressing the need for synergies, traditional distinctions between foreign policy and economic and trade policies have become blurred by globalization. And in particular, the trend of using economic and trade policy options to solve political disputes, together with the prevalence of political conditionalities in official development assistance. Development assistance, Madam Speaker, something members opposite should be very familiar with. Mechanisms like the Helms-Burton Act in the USA require adherence to democratic principles are political foreign relations tools calculated to have economic impact. You see, Madam Speaker, nowadays the whole question of foreign policy aid, these things are all tied together. In many cases, some countries trade for aid. And I'll tell you, Madam Speaker, that in the current ongoing negotiations between the CARIFORUM countries and the European Union for an economic partnership agreement, very important when you talk about where money is coming from, the Europeans have attempted to include clauses relating to good governance, human rights, and other conditionalities. Even in the retail sphere, Madam Speaker, you know, your fair trade bananas? What is it that informs the purchase of fair trade bananas to allow you a higher price? It's that you're working within certain parameters. This is the reality of the world today. People are becoming more conscious of human rights and that sort of thing. So governments have conditionalities they add when they're talking in terms of peace. Madam Speaker, the whole question of aid, I will say this, and there's a point to it. And that is that a country's economic and trade policies and trade negotiation strategies cannot be separated from political relations, from issues of political relations. Indeed, they are international relations issues. International negotiations, therefore, whether trade or otherwise,
are a political phenomenon of the present. The constraints with which I'm faced by virtue of the internal distribution of portfolios notwithstanding, my ministry will use all the resources and political capital at its disposal to enhance and promote our national interests. We'll seek to extend diplomatic relations to all friendly countries in the interest of St. Lucia. We'll seek to deepen the regional integration process, very important at this time, both at the CARICOM and OECS levels, and indeed return St. Lucia to the prominent and leading roles it once held within these organizations. Madam Speaker, I will move on to the issue of overseas representation. You know, this is a vexing issue, you know. The reality, Madam Speaker, is that in 1997, prior to 1997, this country had honorary consuls, for example, in Japan and South Korea. It is one of the mechanisms that we use to reduce the cost of overseas missions. There's an expansion drive within my ministry at this point in time to have representation in many places overseas. But we're not going to place that burden on the St. Lucian taxpayer. What we're going to do is seek to have the right people, competent people, well-connected people, to advance our national interests in those countries by setting them up as honorary consuls in those countries. When the former administration won in 1997, they broke the connection with the Japanese honorary consul, victimization of sorts, with the South Korean honorary consul, two economic powers in the world. In the case of Japan, a country we got numerous amounts of aid from, everybody knows about it, the whole fisheries thing. And they have never restored it. Why? They forgot? They were sleeping. Madam Speaker, there has been an extraordinary amount of wastefulness in our overseas missions in the past several years. Wastefulness, extravagance. An office that costs over $30,000 a month, US dollars in rent. Wasted space. I went to New York recently to visit the office and to meet with the staff. And I'm going to say something here for those, Madam Speaker, for those members opposite who wish to talk about victimization on the part of this government and mention names like Gilroy Satney. Gilroy Satney was in a red shirt campaigning all over the place, making all sorts of pronouncements. But I'll tell you something, Madam Speaker. I went to New York. And in the time that I spent in that office there, I met a young man, a brother of Claudius Francis. I had an opportunity to chat with him and see him at work. This man is a committed servant of the people. I wouldn't dream of anybody talking about releasing this individual or letting him go because he's Claudius Francis's brother. Excellent individual. It only goes to show, Madam Speaker, that as long as you're here to do your work and understand that you're a civil servant and you're not in politics, this government has absolutely no problem with you. But the fact of the matter, Madam Speaker, is that there are people in the service who have an agenda far different from the contracts which they sent. There's an agenda by certain individuals, not many, just a few, to undermine persons in this government.
And it is our duty, as persons who have been given the responsibility, we members here have been given a responsibility by the population of this country, to ensure that we can discharge our duties. And if there are persons out there who are willfully and deliberately attempting to pervert the onward march of this nation by means of causing problems within this government, I think we are duty bound to deal with it. That is the reality. Madam Speaker, as I said, diplomatic missions are an expensive proposition, but there has been considerable waste and extravagance in our overseas missions. When we utilize public funds in overseas missions, Madam Speaker, we have to ensure that it is done in such a manner as to derive maximum benefit for our people. But we're a poor country, a small country. We've got to choose carefully where we send people. And when we send them there, we've got to ensure that, you know, we watch the dollar. But in the course of this presentation, Madam Speaker, I will show you how our dollar was dealt with at overseas missions. In addition, Madam Speaker, we must be careful about the personnel we send over there. We must make sure we have qualified people who can do the job that we send them to do. That can't be an arena for nepotism and cronyism, where you are family of this and brother to that minister and daughter of that well-connected party hack, and that's how you end up getting in a mission. So you can disappear and solutions won't see you, while you continue to feed on the public purse with no results for the people of this country. That's the result. That is what has been happening. So we have to deal with it, Madam Speaker. And deal with it, we will. I've had several meetings, Madam Speaker, since assuming office. I've met with ambassadors from many countries of the world, India, Korea, Russia, Canada, UK, you name it. I've met various of my colleagues and counterparts in parts of the OECS, Central America, because we're trying to expand our relations with a number of countries, Central American countries, deepen our relations, you know, CSME is on the way. And there's considerable evidence that there's a lot of goodwill out there for solution in the international community. And I'll tell you, we intend to build on that. We intend to develop that. Today, Madam Speaker, we have commitments from a number of countries to assist us. Korea, with agricultural machinery and communications equipment for the GIS. I'll deal with the GIS later. These are areas in which they plan to assist us. Computers as well, because you know we're moving heavily into the ICT area. This is something that we spoke about on our platforms. We think it's a good area to go into. And Madam Speaker, we have every confidence that because of the high volume of, or as labor intensive as it is, we'll be able to take a lot of these young people who will find themselves on that growing list of unemployed. We'll find them something to do. And not just something to do for doing sake, but somewhere where you can earn a living wage. It's important to earn a living wage. Not something that's going to be called a dependent wage. So you're getting this money, but you know, you can't leave, you don't want to stay, you're stuck. This is what we're getting now. Turkey, Madam Speaker, make a large donation of computers to assist again in the ICT things. And Japan, Madam Speaker, has come with a new framework of assistance called the Grassroots Project. Now, I'm not claiming any credit for this. In fact, Madam Speaker, I wish to say that I had the pleasure of being invited to a ceremony at Sanssouci in which the
the members, the people, or group of elderly persons from the Castries North constituency were about to receive a grant from the Japanese government in order to build, or to, shall we say, refurbish an old folks home. And when I got there, I saw the former member, the former representative. He was there, and he was quite graciously and deservedly thanked for assisting in that area. So I don't claim any credit for it, but I will claim credit for expanding it, because it's available. I'm surprised that other members did not actually make use of this, especially considering the number of issues, number of areas in which such assistance would be useful. Madam Speaker, I will touch briefly here on the issue of China. We all know, Madam Speaker, that I'm going to get my notes there properly, because this one is important. You know that issue has been generating a lot of interest. I heard a collective breath when I mentioned that name. Madam Speaker, the issue of our relations with China, as I said, seems to be generating a great deal of interest. And there has been much said within the local media, particularly by persons, you could say, who have been well aligned with the opposition. It is quite interesting that we now hear calls for consultation with the public and the opposition. We hear of one China policy, etc. Modi is not relevant in 1997, when the then government elected to break diplomatic relations with Taiwan. In fact, Madam Speaker, the reason we were giving for breaking diplomatic relations with Taiwan at the time was that the Taiwanese were giving us trinkets compared to what we could receive from China. At the time, there was no talk of one China policy or any such thing. It seemed to be driven purely by greed. But Madam Speaker, in spite of all the commitments we're hearing, or what we're hearing about international commitments, this government has handled this matter in a most responsible manner. We have been guided only by the national interests of St. Lucia, and nothing more. It is a fact, Madam Speaker, that China is a major world power, both economically and politically. China has also contributed to our development over the last 10 years. And we express our appreciation for that. However, Taiwan is also a major trading nation in the world. It is the world's largest supplier of computer monitors and a leading manufacturer of personal computers and other electronic items. It has the third largest foreign reserves in the world and is in fact one of the largest investors in China itself. Almost 60%, maybe more, of China's trade exports produced by Taiwanese. Taiwan is competing in Olympics. That's Taiwan. And it's being held in Beijing, by the way. I forgot to mention that. Taiwan sits on the World Trade Organization and is recognized by over 30 countries. Taiwan, Madam Speaker, is an island like St. Lucia. And the point of view of scale and size, it offers us much possibilities for replicating their models of development and for technology transfer. This government, Madam Speaker, would be irresponsible if we were to close our eyes to these possibilities. Perhaps, Madam Speaker, the leader of the opposition should tell us why his good friend in St. Vincent, Dr. Ralph Gonzalez,
who has diplomatic relations with China, with Taiwan, sorry, why he has not made such a great effort to convert him to the one China policy. But I will say this, Madam Speaker, I will make a more definitive statement on this matter later in this address. In this address. Madam Speaker, I spoke about overseas missions earlier. Nowhere is the wasteful extravagance of the last administration demonstrated more clearly than its administration of the overseas missions. Over $8 million has been spent in the past couple of years on overseas missions. And I want to bring members' attention to two particularly bad cases. The Hellenite case. I think most people have heard about the Hellenite case. Solutions are very familiar with it. Honorable members will recall that an ambassador appointed by the last administration transferred ownership of a building housing a community center for St. Lucian nationals in New York to congregate and host cultural activities. In April 2005, a title dispute commenced in the Supreme Court of New York between the government of St. Lucia and Mr. Bartlett. Mr. Bartlett had refused to adhere to an agreement between himself and the government. I don't want to rehash all the details. I don't mean to embarrass members opposite by talking about this thing over and over again. But Madam Speaker, the important thing is that the government had told us that this matter was resolved. And that's why it's important. To my surprise on assuming office, and remember, this issue became important when the Prime Minister literally washed his hands of the matter, saying, putting no more money in this thing, irrespective of what may have happened. I learned that not only was there an ongoing case in the courts in New York between the government of St. Lucia and Michael Bartlett, but that a third party, one Mr. Julius James, had been drawn into the dispute. Madam Speaker, apparently when the mortgage on the property became due, the government, and I assume particularly the Prime Minister, decided that it was spending no more money on the property. There was a risk, therefore, that the property would be seized and lost to St. Lucia and St. Lucians in New York altogether. The then ambassador, Mr. Hunt, presumably authorized by the government, entered into an agreement with the said Mr. Julius James, under which Mr. James advanced to the government of St. Lucia. I mean, was the government broke? Mr. James, a private citizen, advanced to the government of St. Lucia the sum of $158,000. Which was used to settle the mortgage and thus save the property. Subsequently, Mr. James advanced a further $15,000 to meet taxes owed on the property. The government then undertook to sell the property to Mr. James for the price of US$550,000. My information suggests that the property is worth a lot more than that, Madam Speaker. But this government, this past government, was prepared to give it away. This is the mess we inherited, Madam Speaker, one of many. And we are presently in the process of trying to work our way out of it. As this is a matter which is still being pursued in the court, I will not go much further on this. Safe to say that we are currently doing an evaluation on the property to determine the exact value of this property.
The ambassador's residence, Madam Speaker. The former ambassador's residence. These are the issues that, in spite of Goldthwait, Goldthwait stood by borrowing people of this country.
Minister, you have 10 more minutes within which to complete your presentation. Honourable Minister for Health.
Madam Speaker, I beg that the Honourable Minister be granted an additional 30 minutes to complete his presentation.
Honourable Members, the question is the standing order 3210 be suspended to allow the Honourable Minister for External Affairs an additional 13 minutes within which to complete this presentation. I now put the question, as many as are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
As many as are of the contrary opinion, say no.
No.
I think the ayes have it.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. There was a lone voice in the wilderness. Something he has to get used to. Madam Speaker, the government, the previous government, previous administration, bought a house in New York for the then ambassador and paid US $1.45 million for the house. That's almost $1.5 million US dollars. Close to what? $4+ million EC? It's a lot of money. Fixed a lot of roads in my constituency. Give a lot of solutions a job. A little electricity, a little water. Can do a lot of things for the Maligwe that were purported to have been represented. But no, it went into an ambassador's residence. Both ambassadors, Hunt and Huntley. It's a nice team. Sound like a bowling attack, Hunt and Huntley. Both of them lived in the residence, Madam Speaker. But Madam Speaker, we have to take this in context. The real estate market in New York at that time was booming. Properties were going up by as much as 15, sometimes 20%, depending on exactly where you were in that particular part of the United States. Can you imagine at 1.5 million if it's going up 20% a year? Let's just say 10, for argument's sake. That's $150,000. That's something you don't know about. But Madam Speaker, that's not stock market, that's real estate, Madam Speaker. But Madam Speaker, here we go. In that environment, real estate prices escalating rapidly. Speculators buying houses all over the place and flipping them over in 6 months and making massive profits on the sale of these homes. But what happens to the government of St. Lucia's house? Right after purchasing it, almost $100,000, US dollars, spent in renovations, fancy furniture, you know, making the thing real spruced up for the ambassadors, Hunt and Huntley. But, Madam Speaker, after 3 years of staying in the house, somehow or the other, it is said that the ambassador felt it was a little too far. So he decided he wanted to move closer to the mission, the UN mission in New York. So he moved into a Manhattan apartment. 5,000-6,000 US dollars a month rent. So of course he's in a Manhattan apartment and a $1.5 million home is left there. So it begins to deteriorate. Nobody checking on the house, nobody doing anything. The people's money. During the period October 2003 to November 2004,
because of deterioration in the residence. It was $155,940 US. That's almost $400,000 or thereabouts, EC dollars, was spent to renovate the property again. The people's money. Economics. And then, after all of that was done, it was left there. Nobody maintaining it. So water is in the pipes. Nobody drains anything for winter. The winter comes, the water expands in the pipes, bust pipes all over the house, spread water all over the house. It's left there. Nobody goes back in there. And then after that, mold and mildew sets in the summer because the thing is all wet. Now the heat comes in, turns into a mess. The long and short of it, Madam Speaker, is that at the time when real estate was moving up in price by leaps and bounds in the United States, the government of this, the former government of St. Lucia, finally settled on selling this property for $1 million. $450,000 less than they paid for it, plus all the renovations and everything else that was done.
I think
honorable
members are seeing the house. I do recall it from that. It was certainly not $1 million. I believe that either his figures have failed him or his memory has failed him. So I would ask him at appropriate time to clarify the figure, because I do recall it's anywhere from 1.3 or 1.4 thereabouts, but not 1 million, certainly not 1 million. But in the absence of the formality of it, and I speak from my knowledge as Minister of Finance, not 1 million.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I hope I get that minute back. But what I will say is that I stand by my figures. That was slightly less than $1 million. It was 990-something thousand, to be precise. So, Madam Speaker, we see the waste. And I ask, Madam Speaker, if you will be so kind as to alert me when I have 15 more minutes. I will move on at this time, Madam, because I think my point is well made, and there is no need for any further elucidation on this matter. Madam Speaker, the portfolio of information and broadcasting, which have been added to my ministry, present their own unique challenges. During the course of my tenure as minister, I have indicated that no longer will the Government Information Service or Radio St. Lucia be used exclusively as a spin doctoring mechanism. The people of this country must have confidence in the information coming out of these institutions. They must maintain the highest integrity. And therefore, they will not be propaganda tools, but rather will be used to inform, to elucidate, and to uplift. Madam Speaker, whether Hunt and Huntley or otherwise, there will be no more spinning in GIS or at RSS. What I will say, Madam Speaker, is that we intend to pay serious attention to putting in place a broadcast policy, because there are a lot of demands for licenses now by various persons, and it's beginning to clog the airwaves of this country. But what I will say is that the previous government did sign an agreement, or should I say they gave a company, Carrier Cable, a license to operate. And that company, we expect by them coming in, that they will provide some level of competition, and the prices in the telecommunications sector will go down. And in addition, the persons in the rural communities of this country, particularly the people of Choiseul, they have pledged to ensure that they go in there and deal with matters of cable vision. Choiseul, Madam Speaker, is the area in St. Lucia that suffers the most from a lack of cable vision. And I've told my constituents one thing, and I want them to ingrain that in their memory banks. And that is, that when I leave Sozelle, I have only one wish, and that is to ensure that I leave that place far better than I found it. And I'm willing to be judged on that. And I'm stating for the record in this honorable house, Madam Speaker, that I expect to be judged on that. My performance, how I have improved the standard of living of those people, and how I've made them life better for them. There are also issues, Madam Speaker, which are of concern to St. Lucians, issues relating to sometimes the rather galling nudity that is sometimes exhibited on the airwaves. I think parents need to have some mechanism whereby they can control what their children watch, what they pay attention to, what programs that they focus on. Because we're seeing a sort of cultural invasion in which our values, etc., are being closely aligned to countries and to cultures that are somewhat foreign to us. I have therefore instituted a policy that all companies are going to have to put a mechanism in the home of every customer with cable vision so that parents have the ability to control what their children watch. Madam Speaker, we have the NTN. Very interesting. We want to expand on that. They talk about trying to make it some sort of, make it into a sort of a paying concern. That's debatable. I will seek the advice and certainly the input, I shouldn't say advice, but the input of members opposite on this matter, especially the member for Supra, my friend. But what I will say, Madam Speaker, is that in the course of dealing with information services, the reality is that there will be more educational programs on NTN. There will be more debate. People have an opportunity to see issues thrashed out in a practical environment. Not in a subjective environment, but in an objective environment. So that people can be informed when making decisions. People can then weigh one argument against the other and decide for themselves what's good for them. You know, we look at the talk shows now, there's a lot of stuff going on talk shows. But I will say, at this point, Madam Speaker, that some of these talk shows, you know, they're laced. People have their supporters line up and block off the airwaves so as to make people in the country believe that what they're hearing there is the opinion of the nation. I want to assure you that's not the opinion of the nation, because if it was the opinion of the nation, we on this side of the house would not be sitting here today. Madam Speaker, there is the issue of financial services. I'm going to take an opportunity, Madam Speaker, because of the tremendous amount of information contained in the agreements that was signed by this government, this past government. It is so unusual. The agreement is so unusual in its scope, Madam Speaker, that I welcome the opportunity. I've already indicated that I am going to be seeking, and I have sought, and I'm continuing to seek, real professional advice, because that particular agreement is buried in so many layers of companies, and it reminds me of Rochumel. How many companies are in Rochumel? I believe, Madam Speaker, it's something like 9. You know, this one is the holding company and the parent company and this. I still can't find out who has the company. I don't know who it is. But one thing I do know is that St. Lucians are going to be surprised when they hear about this one. You know, I couldn't even find the agreement. Nobody in government had it. Everybody I spoke to with regards to the agreement told me that the Prime Minister has the agreement. I don't know if it's true or not. The then Prime Minister. Eventually we managed to dig it out. That's what I'm told, Madam Speaker. I will not come to this honorable house and say untruth. You seem to be, even the Director of Financial Services, I said to him, have you seen the agreement? He said, no, sir, I've never seen the agreement. So, I don't know, but we have the agreement now, and we're going to find out what's behind all of this. If that makes anybody uncomfortable, Too bad. Did you say two? Madam Speaker, I want to just cut quickly on constituency matters. How much time do I have left, Madam Speaker? 2 minutes.
Twenty-five minutes?
Oh, I got school about the time. Madam Speaker, in my constituency, there are a number of issues which are very important to the people of Choiseul. Choiseul is a community that's very close-knit. I've always said that this is the part of the country that has the most potential for development after Beaufort, Soufré, and the North, which is already saturated. Soufré, I believe, is also saturated because at this point in time, you can't get land. This government, this past government, oversaw the biggest inflationary spiral in land prices in the history of this country. If your family didn't have a piece of land, too bad for you. There are a lot of places you can't go and buy anything now. But in my constituency, Madam Speaker, we have a basic resource that nobody can deny. And that is the heart, the spirit, the temperament, the goodwill, the natural goodwill of the people of Choiseul. When you talk about hotel workers, if you want a mold for someone who has just a natural affinity for that particular type of work on the basis of their friendliness, you will find them in Choiseul. Whether it's in Beaufort or Soufré, most of the workers in the hotel are from Choiseul. Construction. Artisans. Handicraft makers. Choiseul. I'm proud, Madam Speaker, to represent those people. These people. I know it was a tough slog, but I had to beat two people to win the elections, and I'm not referring to KMT. I'm referring to TNT. TNK. Kenny and Kenny. Because you ought to beat both of them, because the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister, is from Choiseul, from the Saldivas area, but has never found it fitting to grace the people. Well, let's not go into that, because that could raise up a whole lot of other things. Don't go into that. I know it well enough to be here, in spite of you. But what I will say, Madam Speaker, is that in the last 9 years, there's really been a neglect of that constituency by the very person who was in a position to do the most for it. And if you're from River Dore, you would think that former Prime Minister, who was Minister of Finance and so on, could have done a lot more to build up that constituency to the point where people would have been able to find their jobs and move forward in terms of advancing their lives. But instead, Choiseul, I believe, was probably the capital of step. Everybody who came forward and wanted to get something, here's a little step program for you. Put people on the paupers list. Young women on the paupers list. I'm told in some cases in exchange for votes. I'm not sure. And when elections were approaching, there was this mad dash to fix roads and try and fool the eyes of the people, fill their eyes, and to say, look, I gave you something. Well, this level of transactional leadership, Madam Speaker, was not acceptable and is not acceptable in the world of today. It's not a question of I give you something, but I want something in return. And what I want from you is more than what I'm going to give you. So I give you a little road, and I want you to vote for me so that I can go back there and do all the things that will benefit me. But the reality, Madam Speaker, is what happened to the young people? What happened to the housing? We did nothing for the young people. No courts, no fields for the young people. Government owns vast acreages of land in the La Farge area. And yet nothing was subdivided to assist the people. The handicraft center the capital of economic activity in the constituency was handed over to a party hack. And that person then proceeded to open their own handicraft shop just down the road. And I'm told that when a tourist came in there and said, you know, they want to buy something, they said, no, it's too expensive here. Go down the road, you can buy it there instead. That's the kind of thing that was going on in the constituency. Governance by patronage, not dealing with the core issues that were affecting the constituency. But we'll deal with it, Madam Speaker. We'll deal with the irrigation system. The irrigation system in the Delta, La Pointe area, to enable the farmers to plant their vegetables and to be able to develop the constituency. Well, the schools are going to get attention because I'll tell you, the Diga school, it's a shame. The teachers use the computer of a neighbor to go and print documents. No computer, no, the school leaks, the tanks for water leak. I mean, just neglect of the highest standard. I want to assure the people of Diga that something will happen.
9 years,
you all did nothing for it. Madam Speaker, the people of Suzelle work hard for the ambulance. We intend to ensure that they get one. Community centers will be developed. Housing and the water problems that they've been suffering in Mongouge and these areas will be dealt with in due course. But what I'm actively pursuing, Madam Speaker, is to bring a hotel development in Shuza for the people of Shuza. I believe that there are so many linkages with agriculture, with handicraft, the core competencies of the people, that I believe that the minute we do that, we will transform that community. We will transform that constituency, because Shuzelle people are not lazy people. They don't stay at home. You give them an opportunity and they will jump on it. Opportunities in farming. I'm going to give them those opportunities as well. Hence the reason for farm implements from the Koreans to assist the farmers of this country. Madam Speaker, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I know that I don't have a lot of time left. But I want to take this on.
You have 17 more minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. But I do want to take this opportunity once again, in spite of the fact that I've driven all over the constituency and revisited people. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs doesn't make it particularly easy to be in your constituency, but of course, I am at this point in time developing a foundation for my people. I'm out there and I'm putting the foundation together. So if I'm not there as often as I would like, or as my loving people would like to see me, let me just say to them that the time is soon approaching when I will be able to sit with you and for us to have our usual interesting discussions and proceed to ensure that we work together for the development of the constituency through the Shuzelle Development Foundation, which I'm in the process of putting together. Let me move now, Madam Speaker, to once again deal with the issue of China and Taiwan. Madam Speaker, there has been over the past few months in this island state of ours an exhilarating display of democracy in its truest form. This display has seen a plethora of newspaper articles. I'm not Berlin John. Of observations on talk shows. Of politicians on both sides of the divide making comments. And a general airing of views in the highways and byways of this country. This display, Madam Speaker, has been on a topic that the previous administration never gave the citizens of St. Lucia any chance in the past to make any comment on. Any chance to air their views. I talk, Madam Speaker, of the China-Taiwan issue and the healthy discussion that has taken place on whether or not this government should establish diplomatic relations with Taiwan. On one hand, Madam Speaker, we have had this healthy display of democracy at work. But on the other hand, we have also had the unfortunate display of hypocrisy and two-faced actions of those sitting opposite, who have had the gall to state in the media that they are disturbed by the lack of discussion and dialogue on this issue. We have already had a member opposite describing our government's handling of the issue as provocative, insulting, and humiliating as he tries to force us to adhere to the St. Lucia Labour Party's diplomatic policy of the past 9 years. With all the evidence around them, these naysayers have not taken the opportunity to contrast what is happening in St. Lucia today with the manner in which in 1997 there was a draconian change made in the diplomatic status of Taiwan. Where was the discussion in 1997? Where was it? Where was the plethora of newspaper articles in 1997? How much time was given by the SLP government and some of the members opposite for the people of St. Lucia to discuss the changing of the guard with regard to China and Taiwan in 1997? The answer, Madam Speaker, was none. Yet today, they display the same arrogance, the same snickering that got them kicked out of office by not only failing to recognize democracy at work, but also having the gall a few weeks ago to request that the operations of this House be suspended so that the member for Beaufort South could present a document in this House as to why the foreign policy, of the failed previous administrations should be adhered to. It is time that this gentleman opposite got used to the situation, Madam Speaker. It is time for him to understand that the reason that he sits on your left is precisely because of his failure at governance and the failure of his administration to utilize foreign policy for the benefit of the people rather than the St. Lucia Labour Party and his own self-aggrandizement. Madam Speaker, the previous two administrations had the travesty of a 1,000-page criminal code presented and passed in this House with no or minimal discussion, I should say, with the people of this country. We had the infamous Section 166 dealing with abortion that was the concern of a large segment of our Christian population, and we had this rammed down our throats and the throats of our citizens with the least amount of discussion. We have had the flawed labor code, which our government has to revisit, passed in this House for political expediency, irrespective of whether or not it met the aspirations of the relevant stakeholders in our society. Now, Madam Speaker, this set of overlords who walked our political landscape with an arrogance of unimaginable magnitude, who mismanaged every aspect of our public affairs, want to find fault with an open process in which this government has not only allowed its citizens to take part in a healthy debate, but has also allowed themselves the time to examine all the best options in which our diplomatic policy can find nexus with the developmental aspirations of our people. Madam Speaker, in exercising the sovereign right of our nation, our government has held discussions with representatives of both the People's Republic of China and of Taiwan. High-level delegations from both sides of the Taiwan Strait have had fruitful discussions with Prime Minister Sir John Compton and myself, and we have passed on the results of these discussions to our colleagues in Cabinet. Highest on the agenda of these discussions has been the welfare and well-being of the citizens of St. Lucia, coupled with the maintenance of cordiality in our relations with both the People's Republic of China and Taiwan. As stated in Her Excellency Dame Paulette Luisi in her throne speech on Thursday, April 20th, 2007, when I quote, "Independence gives your government the right to choose. The only guide should be what is in the best interest of the people of our country and the advancement of their good and welfare." Her Excellency also went on to say My government offers the hand of friendship to all peoples and has no desire to be embroiled in diplomatic entanglement. I will touch briefly, Madam Speaker, on one aspect of this subject that needs ventilation. For many persons, the only criteria for determination of our position should be the benefits of what is euphemistically known as checkbook diplomacy. In other words, support those who give you the most when they open their checkbooks. This policy took precedence in 1997 when we were informed by the administration of 1997 to 2004 that we were to be receiving a four-lane highway all the way to Vivortu, not just the one from Europe, a cultural complex, a national stadium, as part of a deal to recognize China and cut diplomatic relations with Taiwan. For many, these grand projects were more than sufficient reason for a transfer of their allegiance. Lock the doors. Kick them out. I, Madam Speaker, recognize that it is with honorable intentions that our friends on either side of the Taiwan Strait have in the past and presently extend the hand of friendship through economic assistance. This assistance has been vital for our development, assisting some of the most disadvantaged of our people. On behalf of our people, I sincerely thank those countries who have used a larger resource base to assist a small developing island state like St. Lucia. I thank them. Madam Speaker, the Honorable Prime Minister in his address to this House on Thursday the 19th April placed in perspective the decline in the quality of life that has plagued the left possessed in this country throughout the past two administrations led by Dr. Kenny Anthony and the St. Lucia Labour Party. The poverty assessment study, which was purposely kept hidden prior to and throughout the last elections, showed that poverty in this country had increased from 18.7% in 1995 when the UWP were in power to 21.4% in 2006 under the St. Lucia Labour Party. An increase of almost 15%, give or take a percentage or so. Most striking, as noted by the Prime Minister, was the huge divide, and this cannot be denied, that had developed under the SLP between the rural and urban populations of St. Lucia. Most alarming, and indicative of the policy and management failures of the previous government was that poverty on average was in excess of 40% in rural areas such as Supre, Ansare, Labri, Miku, and Suzelle. This from an SLP administration always pregnant with words, hypocritically describing itself as a Malawi government, and spinning promises which kept us at the rainbow's edge, futilely reaching out for the fairy tale pot of gold that has yet to arrive. Madam Speaker, I bring up this point to assure the people of this country that our government, in speaking to our allies, will place great emphasis on support for our rural populations, particularly in the areas of the honorable professions of agriculture and tourism. In this, we will stop at source the urban drift and turn the rural areas into areas of opportunity and social stability for our citizens, particularly our youth. My other comment on this aspect of the decision making on this subject is simple. If we look around the Caribbean, we'll see emphatic evidence that whether with China or Taiwan, that benefits have accrued to countries that support either political entity. If we look to our immediate south, we see St. Vincent and the Grenadines with diplomatic relations with Taiwan, receiving ample constructive support from their diplomatic friends. The former Prime Minister would know something about that. If we look to our north, we find the same in Dominica, which has diplomatic relations with China, and over the past few years has received significant budgetary support from their diplomatic friends. I can assure you that this UWP government will work closely with all our friends in the diplomatic arena to ensure that whatever benefits can accrue to our citizens are realized. I now come to the meat of the matter. During the period of time in which this issue was being discussed, with the aim of resolution, a number of fruitful and frank meetings took place within the confines of Cabinet. Today, and in this appropriate forum, Madam Speaker, I confirm that the overwhelming consensus within Cabinet is for the renewal of full diplomatic relations with Taiwan at the earliest possible opportunity. We consider the peoples of both Chinese entities to be friends of the people of our nation, and therefore extend the hand of friendship to both. We therefore welcome the re-establishment of full diplomatic relations with Taiwan, as with this move, we confirm the statements and sentiments from the Prime Minister with regard to the urgent developmental priorities. This action should not be construed as a severance of our relationship with the PRC. However, the level of our relationship in the future will be based on what they consider appropriate in the circumstances. I reiterate that this stability in the rural areas is of, and let me continue here, is of vital importance, and Taiwan as an island state fully recognizes and empathizes with the importance of this prioritization. We intend to make full use of their offers, which will center on the areas of agricultural diversification, linkages between agriculture, handicraft and tourism, development of a livestock farm and abattoir, plus the development of ICT, information and communications technology, learning centers in each and every community on the island. Further, expansion of this trust to support economic growth and expansion of opportunities in rural areas such as Denry, Anseray, Chazelle, Babano, Labri, Supre, Miku, and parts of Beaufort will also include the development of small and medium enterprises, plus the setting up of a special revolving fund for agricultural development, among other options. Madam Speaker, we are also cognizant that the establishment of diplomatic ties with Taiwan has the added advantage that we are dealing with a high-tech country that is the leader in the world and one of the top producers of a number of products that we take for granted today in the digital world. Our linkages with Taiwan, therefore, will not be one-dimensional, as over the next few years, we will pursue all avenues for employment, not only in the rural areas, but for our youth in particular. Madam Speaker, I emphasize that the uneven distribution of wealth in this country, along with the urban-rural divide, has made a mockery of the so-called progress that has been boasted about by the previous administration. The poor administration characterized by words and spin doctoring that have turned our little country into one of the haves and have-nots was a dangerous reversal of the successes and balanced creation of wealth that occurred under the United Workers' Party starting from the 60s. Today, even those that have need to barricade themselves in their homes as the negative effects of urban drift because of lost opportunities in rural areas causes increases in criminal crime and criminal behavior. Our tourism industry is under threat because if one single criminal act by some frustrated individual can bring this industry to its knees. Therefore, Madam Speaker, this government's holistic understanding of the development and progress which had us to develop a successful balanced tripod economy has now caused us to renew the friendship with Taiwan with a view to assistance in creating a stable and balanced economic and social environment in our small island state. That, Madam Speaker, is what vision and leadership is all about. Our government...
Honorable Minister, I hate to interrupt you, but you should be winding down.
I am winding down, Madam Speaker.
You have exceeded your time.
Our government, Madam Speaker, in the short term and following this parliamentary session, will move on to outlining the details surrounding this new development, and I will report back to the citizens of this country at the appropriate time. Finally, Madam Speaker, in standing and in adding my voice to the debate on the 2007-2008 estimates of expenditure, I cannot help but extend my congratulations to the Honorable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance and Fiscal Development for once again returning sanity to this chamber and the budget exercise in particular. I thank you, Madam.